meeting of Ways and Means to order. And today we have Commissioner Franz tell us all the wonderful things about the governor's budget. And even though we're close to having quorum, we're going to start so we can make sure you have plenty of time for questions.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to go through the governor's budget this morning. The slide, that you should have a copy, I think, of the slide deck in front of you, but we'll also have it on the screens to walk through. And Budget Director Margaret Kelly, to my right, will also assist in helping me make this preparation. What I'd like to do is start off with some general background materials, but pretty quickly get into the math, because I know you want to hear about the math and how the budget adds up. So we'll get into some charts and go through that, and then be obviously open for questions. So as you know, every 2 years we begin this budget process based on the November forecast. And if you look back at what we've experienced before, I think one of the things that we recognize, and the governor recognizes, is that we have a much improved budget situation today than we've had in a number of years. So if you look at the chart there, you'll see that over the last 2, 4, and 6 years, at this point in the process, we face some significant budget deficits. And 6 years ago, we faced a $4.8 billion deficit. 4 years ago, we faced a $6.2 billion deficit. And 2 years ago, we faced a $1 billion deficit as we entered into the legislative process. Today, we are looking at a little over a billion dollar budget balance for this biennium, and a 2.7 budget balance for the next biennium. This is the first time since 2006 that we have a positive budget balance for the upcoming biennium and for the next. The state's financial health continues to improve, something I'm sure we're all glad to see happening. You know, we believe that we've increased fair and sustainable revenues. We believe that we put an end to chronic deficits and finally stabilize the budget into the future. We've increased our budget reserves to the highest levels ever to help protect Minnesota from future economic downturn. And to mention the governor's values, and then I'll get into the math. Governor Dayton's values are really depicted on this slide, and that is to focus on students, 0 to 18, where we would dedicate over half of the state's budget forecast and balance to improve the lives and educations of children across Minnesota, including voluntary pre-K and school breakfast for many kids. The governor proposes investing more in higher education to provide additional financial aid and to improve the quality of higher education institutions. And finally, the governor proposes helping families and children by increasing funding for child care assistance, child protection, improved mental health services, community services for people with disabilities, and tax relief for hundreds of thousands of middle-class Minnesotans, including the child and dependent care credits.
Commissioner, we're going to call this meeting officially to order. We have a quorum. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's go to the next slide and start talking a little bit about the math. Let me explain this chart. First of all, this chart shows the November forecast balance. It shows the balances that we received based on the November forecast for the beginning balance and the budget balance of a little over $1 billion, $1,037,000,000. In the middle column, you see the governor's proposed changes to the forecast amount, and then you see what the governor's budget is proposed for the next biennium in 16 and 17. So the last column shows the governor's budget if fully enacted. First of all, I'd like to point out that in the first line, the beginning balance, if you look on the middle column, the governor's changes, you see $54 million reduction. This includes the federal tax conformity that was recently passed, and once again, thank you to the legislature for moving so quickly on the federal conformity. It also includes some disaster relief that the legislature has also moved on, and it includes some deficiency proposals for certain agencies that this committee and other committees are hearing. The next line, revenues, is a combination of revenues and fees, and it shows that overall, if you take all the governor's tax proposals together, the net effect is a reduction in revenues for the next biennium of $16 million. We'll explain that more in detail a little bit later on. The next line for expenditures shows $932 million, and in the next chart we'll describe how that $932 million is invested. But this shows the amount of new investments the governor intends to make. The number four item I want to point out is on the bottom right. If you look at the $35 million at the bottom of that column, that shows $35 million left on the bottom line. The next number I'd like to point out is right above that, the $42 billion. That is the proposed governor's expenditure budget for 2016-2017. You'll notice over on the left column, the reserves of a little over $1.3 billion. This includes the budget reserve that was added during the last session of $150 million, and it also includes $183 million that was added based on the law change that was made last session, where 33% of a budget balance in November will by law be added to the state's reserve. So you combine those two additions from 2014, and we have the little over $1.3 billion reserve. Let's go to the next chart. This really takes the $1 billion number and shows where that money is invested in the governor's proposed budget. This is an allocation of his investments. Now, we've broken this down into different categories, and as we go through this process today, Budget Director Kelly and I will break these numbers down in different ways to show you where they fall. But this is our sort of first higher level look at where the money is being invested. As you know, in E-12 education, the governor's primary area of investment, we would invest $273 million, or about 37% of the new investments, or the $1 billion into those areas. The higher education, we would invest $93 million, or 9%. In health and human services, the governor proposes investing $185 million, or 18%. The child and the dependent care credit would be approximately $100 million investment, or 10%. In the public safety, courts, and corrections area, we take about $137 million. This includes the corrections issue and also the request by the courts, and that's about 14%. And finally, all other areas would take the remainder. But I would like to point out, if you add those first four numbers, the 37%, the 9%, the 18%, and the 10%, that adds to 75%. So 75% of the governor's proposed investments go to the E-12 education, higher education, health and human services, and child care credits. And now if we go to the next chart, we'll see a pie chart that shows where the money, the $42 billion general budget for the next biennium, where that money would be invested if the governor's budget was enacted. You can see at the very top that health and human services is about 28% of the general fund, higher education about 7%, and E-12 education about 42%. These add up to about 77%. So you can see that the governor's investments with the budget balance pretty much follow the major investments that we make year in and year out in education, health services, and higher education. The other areas off to the side show you where the general fund money goes for the other areas. And now if we go to the next slide, we'll see the all funds budget. As you know, about a week ago, we at this committee, we talked a little bit about the all funds budget and the general fund budget. The all funds budget is a $77 billion budget. And in this case, because of the influx of federal dollars and other fund money, the percentages change a little bit. The health and human services now goes to 45%. The transportation goes from 1% in the prior slide to 10% in the all funds budget. E-12 education is 24%, and higher education goes down to 4%. If you add higher health and human services, higher education, and E-12, it comes out to be about 73% of the all funds budget. But here you see the influx of the transportation dollars, the highway transit fund dollars, and federal dollars for health care. So I've just got two more slides I'd like to go through, the math, and then we'll walk through some of the actual proposals into the different areas. So this chart shows you the proposed general fund revenue that would be the result of the governor's proposal. In this slide, we break down the revenue into the major categories that we look to in terms of the general fund budget, the individual income tax, corporate income tax, and so on. And so what you see here is a combination of the forecast from November and the additional investments that the governor proposes in his budget of the $1 billion budget balance. So if you add those into this particular slide, you'll see where the revenues will be coming from, and there'll be a very level amount of revenue coming in. If you'll see, the forecast showed $41.88 billion in revenue, and the governor's proposed changes in forecast show a $16 million reduction, or a $41.864 billion revenue proposal for the 16-17 biennium. Now, this also includes, as I mentioned, the federal conformity that was already passed, and also includes the different proposals in the governor's budget. So this shows us what we would propose would be the end result of the revenue for the 16-17 budget. If you go to the next slide, then this shows you the expenditure.
Representative Kahn has a question.
I have a question about how these estimates were arrived at. Do these forecast figures for the revenues that are coming in, do they include inflation as a factor?
Mr. Fran.
Mr. Chair and the representative, in terms of forecasting, the forecast itself, the November forecast, does include inflationary factors in the projection of future revenues going forward. So many of these, the forecast numbers that are included in here do include inflation adjustments.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, as you know, we have a line in our in our statutes which says that we cannot include inflation in our expenditure ones. Just looking at a balanced equation, and since you're in charge of the department that's most in charge of numbers practically, do you think it makes any sense to have something on one side of an equation that doesn't exist on the other side of the equation?
Mr. Fran.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I think one of the issues that we always have to look at in terms of MMB is its presentation of the numbers to the legislative body and to the governor. As policymakers, I think it's critical that you all have the information that you need to make the decisions. And so whether we include inflation or not, it's important that we point out whether it's there or not. But I think that's really a hard question for policymakers to decide whether the inflation numbers should be on both sides of the equation. As you mentioned, they're not in the expenditure side, although in some of the forecast numbers for different programs, there are estimates that do include growth and some inflation, but not all of the numbers or most of the numbers. But I think it's a good question to ask. I don't have the answer for that. I think it's important that we present the math clearly, and I think that's one of the issues that needs to be addressed.
Thank you.
I'd like to just point out on this slide the proposed general expenditure slide. That's one wrong, correct, Budget Director Kelly? This takes the investments and the forecast and puts it into the bill areas a little bit more in line with how the legislature looks at some of these different expenditures. So this is where the governor proposes to invest the balance that's available. In addition, this also includes growth from the November forecast. And as you can see at the bottom of the page in the middle column, the $932 million, those are the investments the governor proposes making into these different bill areas. Some of these numbers are similar to what you saw before. For example, the top line, E12 education, the $373 million number is the same there. But some of the other numbers are a little bit different because some of the bill areas breaks up these numbers a little bit differently. But I think at the bottom of the slide on is the $42.1 billion shows you the overall proposed expenditures for the general fund budget for the next biennium. And this includes, by the way, leaving the reserve at a little over $1.3 billion, and it also includes leaving about $35 million on the bottom line.
Commissioner Representative Carlson has a question. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, the Minsky, I'll call it holdback, until they get some issues resolved. Where do those numbers appear, and are they calculated into the various pie charts that you had or on this list? Or where is that? I forget what the exact amount was, but there was a significant dollar number of dollars that were held in reserve. Maybe that's the better way to put it, until they resolve their internal issues.
Mr. Chair, Representative, at the, right now, if you look at the, I said that there was a $35 million left on the bottom line. There is some money available there if, in fact, there's a change made for the MNSCU situation. But there's MNSCU is not located any other place for in terms of an additional amount except as potentially reserved in the bottom line.
So, Mr. Chairman, if they resolve it, there really isn't that amount on the bottom line if they resolve it, because that's probably where a good part of that would go, is what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay, thank you.
I, at this point, would like Budget Director Kelly to begin going through some of the...
Representative Greenius has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, because I'd like to follow up on Representative Kahn. So I am just looking at the previous slide. I'm trying to do the math in my head about inflation. So what number do you use for inflation now? I mean, what is it, 1 point?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll ask Budget Director Kelly to look around and see if we have that right number for you.
Mr. Chair.
Director Kelly, could you give your name for the record?
Sure. My name is Margaret Kelly, State Budget Director at MMB. I believe inflation in the forecast is somewhere around 1.6, 1.4%. I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to get back to you, but it's under 2%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, if I could follow up.
Representative Wiggins.
Thank you. It would be helpful if, so we are don't have to do the math in our head while we're sitting here, that if on a chart like this, you would tell us what the inflation is and whether the governor's proposal is above or below that in each category in this chart. Then we would have a better perspective of what's going on, and more importantly, try to explain this to constituents. I mean, we're really doing this for Minnesotans, and if you are, if you have revenue as one and expenditures as another, and try to explain the math to folks, they don't understand it, and that's not fair. So maybe if you could give us a chart that would help us out.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Representative, we'd be glad to do that. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Liebling, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thought maybe since we're paused again, this might be a good moment to ask this. Commissioner, maybe you were going to get to this in a later slide, but I'm interested in this debt service number. And I'd like to know what goes into that, because it's a pretty substantial number. It's over $1 billion. And in particular, I'm wondering, a few years ago, we part of our budget was to was the tobacco bonds, which I always understood as borrowing to meet that budget. And I'm interested in how much of that debt service is ongoing from having resolved that budget through borrowing, and all the other pieces that are in there, too, and how that number is changing over time, so that we have some context for that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll let Budget Director Kelly answer that.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative, the debt service line is the amount of dollars on a biennial basis that we pay in debt service for all the prior capital budgets that have been enacted, where bonds have been issued and are still outstanding. In terms of the tobacco securitization bonds, we did sell bonds as a result of the 2011 biennial budget legislative session. Those bonds have since been refunded and are no longer outstanding, but I don't recall the exact amount attributed to that. I'd have to get back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to take you too much off of your presentation to this, but I didn't realize that those bonds had been refunded, and I'd like more information about that. I mean, that's terrific if we were able to do that, because when they were let, I understood that that was going to impact our budget for many years. And so I hope we can get some more information on that. Maybe this isn't the right moment, however.
I think Mr. Marks has some input on this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the proceeds of the tobacco bonds affected fiscal 2012 and fiscal 2013, and I believe the amount was $635 million. They reduced general fund spending by that amount because that money came in as the proceeds from the bonds. So general fund spending for debt service in 2012 and 13, one could argue, was artificially low by $635 million. And in fact, if you go back in history, general fund spending that year for debt service, or that biennium for debt service, was $415 million, and then in fiscal 14 and 15, it jumps up to $1.2 billion. That increase was, of course, $635 million, and that was replacing the tobacco bonds. The tobacco bonds have been refinanced, but we are still paying debt service on them. They're no longer tobacco bonds. They're regular appropriation bonds, as authorized by the court. And we have annual debt service payments that comes out of the general fund on those bonds, and just looking for the amount here. The appropriation bond debt service is in the range of $57 million per year next biennium.
Okay. Representative Liebling, that ends your question?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. So if I'm understanding Mr. Marks, so the essentially the impact of the borrowing that was done to close the budget gap that year is, he said, $57 million per year. So we're talking about, if it was on this spreadsheet separately, we'd be talking about $114 million? Because that would be the two-year figure then. Am I about right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebman, that's correct. And it's on that spreadsheet. I'm not sure if it's in debt service or in the all other category.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, Mr. Chair and Representative, Bill Marks is correct, and it's in the all other category.
Mm-hmm. Representative Druskowski, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner and Ms. Kelly. As we look at this, we've been going through and kind of highlighting all of the additional spending that the governor is planning to do, and it looks like I do see the part here that is the surplus, $932 million, which it appears he plans to spend all of it. But I'm curious, if you could remind us, Commissioner, if we go back, what is the total amount of additional revenue that we are going to be anticipating this biennium upcoming here versus the current one? That would go back to the November forecast, but I get as far as I can tell, it looks like we're going to be spending not only the surplus but also the additional revenue that represents the difference between the upcoming biennium and the current one. Could you tell us what that number is,
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if you don't mind, I have two slides showing at the end, comparing the prior biennium with this current biennium, showing the difference in revenue and expenditures. And so I've got that set up. If that's all right, we'll get to it at that point, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Would you continue, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to walk through the investments that the governor is proposing in his 16-17 budget, and we've organized this by bill area. First is E-12 education. The governor is recommending $373 million of investments in our classrooms, our students, and our early learners. First off is 1.1% and 1% each year of the biennium, each fiscal year. On the general education formula. In addition, he's recommending voluntary pre-K for four-year-olds statewide, $109 million investment there. He's also proposing to eliminate the current waiting list for Head Start so that early learners get a chance at quality childcare and early learning opportunities. He's investing $6 million to build on the work of the regional centers of excellence that have helped their schools achieve better outcomes so far. He's recommending $28 million to provide free school breakfast for all students in pre-K through third grade. $10 million to expand the work of Reading Corps and to help children read well by third grade. And almost $8 million to expand eligibility for English language learner funding from 6 years to 7 years. Those are just some highlights. In the higher education area, the governor is recommending $93 million of investment to make public education more affordable for students. He wants to limit tuition increases at the University of Minnesota, is providing $33 million to that end and asking the U of M to find efficiencies in their budgets to make tuition freeze a reality. He's also investing $25 million more in the state grant program through the Office of Higher Education to support students who are paying for college. And finally, he's investing $30 million in the University of Minnesota's medical school to restore the medical school to a national prominence and to train the next generation of world-class medical professionals here in Minnesota.
Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, where does the work-study program for students come under? Is that under general tuition support or?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the work-study program is, I think, a part of the Office of Higher Education, and his increase here for $25 million is for the state grant program, the Pell Grant.
So there's nothing. So the University of Minnesota doesn't have a separate work-study program that's funded through departments?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not able to answer that question. Okay. I think if there was someone here from the university, maybe they could.
Would you like to? Is anybody in here from the university?
Oh, Representative.
We'll try to get the answer for you.
You're the one who should have.
Are you finished with your question?
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I had a different question, but I think, you know, there used to be a separate line item back when I chaired the Education Division of Appropriations for work-study, and that was my understanding that, those dollars were available to all of the systems, public and private, so it would be the U and MinSCU, but maybe that's something we can check on, because there have been changes through the years. But my question goes back to state grant program, and are there proposals as to how that funding would be distributed? You know, for example, just there's all kinds of buttons you can push in financial aid. You can raise the cap. You can increase LME, that stands for Living and Miscellaneous Allowance. Has that been determined yet as to how those dollars would be distributed? That's one area where you have to watch things quite carefully, because you can quickly create winners and losers within the various systems. LME, for example, treats all students the same, whether they attend a public or a private. Raising the cap, that varies, you know, depending on four-year institution versus two-year and so on. So that's an important question with that $25 million. Is there anything you can share with us there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will give it a try, but there is a more detailed explanation of how the state grant program will be changed in the budget document itself in the Office of Higher Education's narrative section. And it specifies which of those buttons actually are being pushed. I know that we are bringing the grant award up to match the University of Minnesota's tuition, and that we are expanding it so that more students will also be eligible. Beyond that, I hate to say it for fear of misspeaking. But.
Okay. I'll look at that later, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Would you continue, please?
So I'm going to move on to the Health and Human Services area of the budget. The governor's making a couple investments in a couple of key areas here. First is for children and family. Over $18 million in quality child care, again, to reduce the waiting list on our basic sliding fee child care program by 750 families, or 13%. He's proposing to continue the parent-aware quality rating system and to simplify the child care assistance program requirements so that help is provided according to the needs of the child and not the parent's work schedule. He's recommending $8 million investment in dental care for low-income families and children to expand access. $2.5 million will increase the oversight of counties that administer our child protection programs. $3 million in home visiting services for over 200 at-risk families with young children. Home visiting has been shown to prevent child abuse and neglect, encourage positive parenting, promote child development and school readiness, and improve economic stability. And also $5 million to maintain services to rural Minnesotans in need of critical access hospital care by increasing that grant program. And in the areas of mental health, $7 million to establish a medical assistance benefit to help families care for children with self-injurious or violent behavior. $6 million to invest in the infrastructure of mental health systems by increasing provider rates to ensure that we have adequate access across the state. And $3 million will support the reformation of group residential housing so that individuals with disabilities may have more choice about where they live. In the areas of public safety, the governor's proposing $136 million investment in core public safety services.
I think Representative Dean has a question, perhaps, for the previous.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Appreciate the investments that the governor is looking at in these areas. There's two questions that I had specific to the Health and Human Services budget. Number one, Representative Hamilton just stepped out, but he has been working with advocates and stakeholders on a very large ticket item, which is a 5% campaign moving forward, which is probably the most expensive piece of legislation within the Health and Human Services budget that is being considered in the legislature right now. I see that the governor does not include that at all in his budget. Was just wondering if you had a comment on a directive, or is that not in a priority that that made it in, or what the viewpoint is of the governor on Representative Hamilton's legislation?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, you raise a really good question. I think this really gets to the concern, the difficulty in trying to allocate the budget balance in a way that the governor felt was fair. I think obviously the governor made some investments in that area before. The legislature and the governor have made other investments in there in the area of the long-term care, and I know that he's concerned about it and wants to open a dialogue with the legislature about these concerns. But I think that's where the governor in his address last week made it clear that this was his proposal. He's certainly willing to listen to other options and other concerns, and that's an area that is of concern, but it was just one that in the allocation of the investments available that was just not able to be put into the budget, Representative.
Thank you, Commissioner. And also, just with regard to the Health Care Access Fund, we had in the last year of a large reserve in the Health Care Access Fund that if we would not have taken money from the Health Care Access Fund, would have in fact triggered a tax decrease from 2% to 1.5% on the Minnesota sick tax. That didn't happen because money was shifted out of the Health Care Access Fund, and in fact the reserves of that fund have gone from one projection to the next within 1 year of over a $500 million reduction within that one fund. I don't see any budget item within the governor's budget to repay that shift of a $500 million for the Health Care Access Fund. Is that in fact covered anywhere in this fund, or is that a shift that has not been paid for?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the key in this situation is that the health care access fund is based on some changes that we're proposing will be balanced for this next biennium. And in terms of making any changes to what was done in the prior budget, there's no proposal at this time to make those changes.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, and I would just like to point out that that is not sustainable. It is structurally unsustainable because the fund, in fact, is going away with the sunset of the 2% tax in December of 2019, and it is not sustainable from the upcoming or current budget. So I'd just like to point out that for folks, a very, very large $500 million shift or a gimmick within this budget that is not addressed and not paid for.
Okay. Erdahl, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Franz, Representative Dean referenced the 5%, which I think is an important consideration. But another factor regarding that that I think needs to be addressed and is not here is the disparity that continues to exist in nursing home payments from the highest level to the lowest mostly being in rural Minnesota. So I would hope that at some point soon that could be addressed.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. That is obviously a concern. I think what all of us are concerned about is reducing those disparities and making the program work more equitably across the state. Thank you.
Great. Mr. Chair, I'll continue with public safety. Again, $136 million investment in this area in core public safety services. $34 million is to maintain the state's core correctional activities and ensure safety for staff, offenders, and the public, maintain the staff that they have. $6 million is to improve and expand community supervision of offenders at both the state level and the local level within the Department of Corrections budget. $1 million is to expand the Department of Corrections Fugitive Apprehension Unit to decrease the number of offenders on warrant or fugitive status and increase public safety. $42 million of this is for the court systems to maintain current service levels, and specifically $13 million within the Board of Public Defense to maintain their current service and to continue to phase in a reduction of caseloads to bring them more in line with national standards. And finally, $11 million for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to provide specialized investigation and lab resources to communities statewide. In the area of the environment, a $21 million investment here, $11 million to maintain operations and maintenance and customer service at our state parks and on our state trails, $4 million to support the state's forest products industry by investing in continued management of forests, including timber harvest, forest inventory, reforestation, and forest road maintenance. A $2 million investment to improve the state's ability to manage, monitor, and remediate emerging contaminated Superfund and petroleum sites. And a $1 million investment in the revisor's office for an online centralized rulemaking system and an expedited rulemaking process to improve public access to that information and efficiency of generating that information. A $1 million investment to expand the capacity of the Environmental Quality Board, the EQB, to support the state's coordinated environmental work. And in addition to the general fund recommendations, the governor is also recommending a $205 million from the Clean Water Fund to continue the work there to protect state waters through collaboration and partnership of multiple state agencies. He's also recommending $88 million to enhance regional and state parks and trails with legacy dollars to create opportunities to connect people to the outdoors. And in the area of food safety and our agriculture economy, some small investments here, $2 million to maintain and expand timely dairy and meat inspections to keep agricultural products moving to the marketplace. And authority and some investment for the Departments of Health and Agriculture to align their food safety regulatory processes to make it easier for businesses to navigate the two systems. And in the area of state government, some small investments.
Representative Kahn's got a question.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't quite understand. Was the state parks and trails, is that only from the legacy fund, or is that general fund and legacy fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative, Governor's recommending general fund investments for state parks and trails primarily.
You said something about legacy. What did you say there?
Correct. He's also recommending the legacy investments for state parks and trails, and I don't have the specific details on what he's doing for trails specifically, but overall he does have a legacy recommendation.
Okay, but this isn't divided. Is this divided? Is this general fund? Is what does this $11 million mean?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the $11 million is a general fund investment.
Okay.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. I also had a question on the trails.
Why'd you say so?
There was an article in the Trib the other day about how we're falling behind with the trails in the area of maintenance. And is this $11 million for new trails, maintenance, or some sort of a blend of the two?
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's primarily for maintenance of existing trails.
Thank you.
I think we can continue.
Mr. Chair, I'll continue with state government and the investments that the governor is recommending here. Almost $1 million to expand our small agency resource team, or SMART, to lower the operating costs for smaller state agencies and to improve their administrative operations by having the Department of Administration handle the financial and HR transactions for those agencies. $1 million at the Department of Administration to expand support for veteran women and minority-owned businesses in the state's procurement process. An $8 million investment to maintain and enhance the state's critical financial procurement and human resource IT systems that are operated by MMB and Minute. And $7.5 million each biennium to allow agencies to carry forward operating funds across biennia, allowing them to manage their financial resources more effectively.
Representative Kahn has a question.
Yeah. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for always seeming to be one page behind. But on the food safety and the agricultural economy, did the governor have any response to the report that we had on moving ahead on industrial hemp production in other states? Did he have any comments on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe there's anything for that in the governor's budget.
I'm trusting Representative Hamilton to take care of that for me.
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I may have missed. Did you cover the safe and effective veterans home line item, the $6 million?
Mr. Chair, no, I was just about to say an initial $6 million to maintain safe and effective services at our veterans homes.
Okay, I thought I missed it. Mr. Chair, I guess I'm wondering, I'm a little interested in that. I was at the veterans home in my community this past weekend, and they indicated that one of the five existing veterans homes could close if they did not receive adequate funding. Is this the adequate funding that they're looking for?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I am not certain of which home they were speaking, but
I think they were speaking in generalities that they could not fund all five. One would have to close. And so I'm just curious if that meets that requirement. And
Mr. Chair, Representative, my understanding is that with this funding, the veterans' homes will be able to maintain all five homes.
Mr. Chair, at the same time, going back to the other veterans' homes that are in competition with these homes, I have a number in my district that, again, are on the verge of closing. So I'm very concerned that the governor has not seen that as an issue. Apparently, there is no concern about the lack of homes and beds available in greater Minnesota, according to this budget. So I hope that can change as we go forward, because it's a critical need, and it affects, again, rural Minnesota particularly.
Mr. Frantz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I certainly appreciate your concern and comments, and I think it's fair to say the governor has a great deal of concern over the beds and the opportunities available for these homes for our veterans, and we'll work closely with any proposals or ideas that you have, but I think the key is that he does see it. This is an important area, and we'll try to work closely with you if you feel there's more need to do something.
Right. Mr. Chair, and I clarify, not just the veterans. These are veterans' homes. I mean, homes that are competing now for beds. Yeah, again, in Greater Minnesota.
Okay. Any other questions? Go ahead, please. Continue.
Next, I just wanted to give a high-level overview of the governor's transportation package and then how it impacts the 16-17 biennium. So he's planning to close a 10-year, $6 billion transportation funding gap, proposing revenue of 6.5% on the wholesale receipts tax on gasoline, registration tax rate and base fee increase as well, and a half-cent sales tax in the seven-county metro area for transit. And his proposed expenditures are for the trunk highway system, also bonding on the trunk highway system, $2.4 billion for local road and bridge projects, and $2.9 billion for our transit systems. So that's the overall 10-year package. If you look in the 16-17 biennium, there's $700 million of trunk highway fund projects, $294 million of county state aid highway projects, $77 million for municipal state aid streets, $10 million on the general fund for Greater Minnesota Transit, and $5 million on the general fund for safe routes to schools.
I think Representative Hornstein has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a point of clarification on page 19. Under proposed revenue, that, just to be clear, that half-cent sales tax is half-cent additional above the existing local option that that is in five of the seven counties currently. That's correct.
Mr. Okay. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on Representative Hornstein's question, so is this an optional tax for them, or is it going to be forced upon them?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe it's optional.
So it sounds like forced upon them, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, voted on them.
Any other questions? Continue, please.
Next up are highlights of some of the tax changes in the governor's budget. $100 million to expand the child and dependent care tax credit. $17 million of corporate tax reform provisions, closing loopholes. And $32 million for property tax modernization, expanding the tax, what qualifies as property for railroads, and an assessment on railroads. And then finally, the federal tax conformity bill, which passed into law on January 24th. Lowering revenues by $19 million in the current fiscal year and increasing revenues by $20 million in fiscal year 16 and 17.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. These transportation questions I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I strongly support your assessment on the railroads. Now, is this money going back, I understand, partly to the counties and then to the state general fund? How is that broken up, and can the counties do whatever they want with it, or does it go to any specific transportation purposes?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is the amount of money you see here listed, the $32 million would go to the state, but the counties would, in the property tax arena, they would have the tax base authority they would also increase their revenue or taxes from the railroads based upon this new modernized method of valuation, and they would be free to do with it as they see fit. It's obviously a local part of their local tax base, and so they could either raise the levy and use that money directly for whatever they wish, but it would be subject to local control and would not be specifically dedicated.
Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, as you probably know, many believe that this proposal about the railroad tax, the property tax, is against the Federal 4Rs Act. We talked about it in tax committee last week. So my question is, does the governor have money built into that $32 million or into the budget generally for the upcoming lawsuit in order to protect the state against the impending suit that would be coming?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the proposal as put forward by the Department of Revenue would be fully defended if necessary. I think the key here is that the modernization of the taxation of railroads would be consistent with what most other states are doing, and in that regard has been able to withstand any of many, if not most, challenges that have been brought against this particular modernization. So we would be anticipating that the Department of Revenue would be fully ready to defend and this particular change, and we feel strongly that it is consistent with the way other states are also taxing railroads.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner, does Revenue then have money built into their budget to defend the state if this lawsuit comes?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Department of Revenue's budget encompasses a legal and appeals division with appropriate allocations of funds to defend the state in many different areas, including this one. So I believe it's adequately funded.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I want to go back to that funding that's available for the railroad upgrades and public safety, and want to know how that number in a general way was arrived at. And the reason I'm asking that question, very recently, the need for railroad upgrade has surfaced in the cities of Crystal and Robbinsdale, one of which I represent. And the issue is that the Canadian Pacific, in particular, is doing some routing changes, and it will close off three major arteries coming in through the northwest suburbs. Raises some safety issues, access to North Memorial Hospital for some of those outer ring suburbs, and so on. So basically my question, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Franz, is that money already committed to various projects along those lines, or is that a block of dollars that is available for emerging safety projects as a result of railroad changes and rerouting and so on?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, on the risk of getting too far out here, I think Commissioner Zelli is the more appropriate person to come and testify about that. I don't want to misstate where these monies are going, but generally there's a couple different areas. There's the enhancement or modernization of the property tax issue that will generate funds, but there's also an assessment for safety issues regarding rail crossings, and that money would be dedicated to those purposes, but I'm not sure if they're project by project at this point.
Okay, I'll ask the Commissioner then of Transportation at some point. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you continue, please?
Mr. Chair, I think we're for the last two slides that we have to present, then we can be open for more questions, but these get to some of the questions that Representative Druskowski, I think, was referring to earlier. So we have two slides, and the first one is the biennial revenue growth. This shows the structure of this slide is you have the governor's or the actual budget from 2014-2015 with a couple of changes that were made during the last part of the 14 and 15 compared to the governor's recommendation for the upcoming biennium of 16-17. You can see the changes that are made. Now the change column that you see is a combination of forecast growth that was projected in the November forecast, and it includes the governor's investment of the $1 billion balance into those areas as well. So you'll see that the change items amount to $2.5 billion. That is both, as I mentioned, forecast growth and the budget balance invested by the governor. And you can see on the right side, the total revenues will increase 6.4% from the 14-15 biennium to the 16-17 biennium if the governor's budget proposal were enacted. And just in terms of comparison, if you go to the next slide, then you'll see the same comparison. Excuse me. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to remind membership that we do have a new biennial expenditure growth sheet handed out to us. So it should be in your packets, a separate sheet.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that I'm on the same page as you are. And so the page biennial expenditure growth should show at the bottom right 7.1%, not the one that you had handed out before that was in your package. So the one we want to talk about today is the one ending with 7.1%. So once again, this includes the governor's both the forecast growth in the expenditure programs, and it also includes the governor's proposed investments of the budget balance into the end of the 16-17 change. So now you will see the total expenditures from this 14-15 biennium. We estimate will be when that all closes out on June 30 will be $39.3 billion, and we're projecting that the governor's expenditure balance for 2016-17 will be $42.1 billion. So you see the increase there is $2.8 billion. Once again, it's a combination of forecast changes in addition to the governor's investment of the budget forecast, and it shows the 7.1% growth in expenditures from 14-15 to 16-17. And I believe that concludes our presentation, and we're ready for more questions.
Okay. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. So back to the biennial revenue growth, Commissioner. If we're going to capture, at least on paper here, the full growth in revenue, wouldn't we have to add the $900 million onto the $2.5 billion in order to get the full picture? I guess that's what I'm looking for.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, the billion-dollar forecast balance that was there on the November forecast, if we didn't invest that, it would show up at the bottom line here, but it is included in the $2.5 billion increase. That's both forecast changes that were made in November, and it's the billion-dollar budget balance that the governor would invest. So it includes both.
Thank you.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. Just kind of looking at overall globally at the budget, it looks like you're a little bit north of $42 billion. Thinking back to not this last budget, but the budget before the first budget that the governor enacted, MMB certified that weighing in at about $34.34 billion. That would represent a 25% increase from that budget to this one. And I'm not seeing a great deal. We talked about, you know, just the growth in spending to go as a 25% increase in that period of time from the governor's first budget to this one. And I'm not seeing a great deal of changes in terms of reform or modification from this document, and I realize how difficult it is to put a budget together in a short period of time. What one thing, if you just had to pick one thing that is a reform within this and is represented in the budget document that people could walk away from and say, this is what we're getting for the additional money from the governor's initiative, what one thing would you pick?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, can I do two?
Take a swing. It's a softball.
I think the number one, as you point to, Representative, would be the well over north of $1 billion that have been saved in the revised way that Commissioner Jessen and the Department of Human Services has negotiated the insurance packages and rates. I mean, when you look at the projected growth of those, the cost of those programs before the commissioner invested in renegotiating and requiring some consistency and some really great cost control mechanisms, that's just been one of those areas where we continue to benefit from really smart contracting and analysis on controlling costs for our healthcare systems. The other one really is the Department of Transportation. I wanted to say that one because we all talk a lot about the efficiencies that we want to see out of the Department of Transportation, and we are seeing some out of those. I know the Commissioner Zelli is excited about trying to incorporate the efficiencies into the budget going forward to meet some of the demands of the need. But as he was explaining to me the other day about the ability to line up these projects, and one of the reasons the governor wants to commit and dedicate money for the long term for the transportation problem is so that we can get those efficiencies where you line up projects years in advance, you get the engineering done, you get the bids in place, and you do things in a way that move assets around the state in a smart way, and you follow up projects in one part of the state, and you make sure you connect them in another way. And as he described that, I was amazed by how much better we can be in terms of expending our money for the highways and roads. So I think that those kinds of smart ways of contracting or in planning can save literally billions of dollars.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. And I agree with you, Commissioner Jessen's plan for rebidding for the HMOs and for our public programs was a good one. That's one that we did when we were in the $6 billion soup that was a very good motivator. That is not this budget. And with regards to the tax increases for transportation and gas tax to, as we're seeing, $2 gas across the state of Minnesota, that's a discussion that I would like to have statewide, particularly in greater Minnesota, in Representative Torkelson's district and Drazkowski and Hamilton and all of the parts around the state to see exactly what kind of a return that we're going to see on that. So we look forward to moving ahead with this, and thank you for your response.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, I just want to make a comment, and then I do have a question. According to the World Food Organization, we have to double the world's food supply in 35 short years. Over a billion people go to bed hungry every single day, and over half the death, they're right about half the deaths of children under five are poor nutrition. We have a land-grant university here, a wonderful university, and also we can, should, and will be leaders in food production. I notice we have $30 million being invested in the Minnesota Medical School. I'd argue that we should be investing in the agriculture school as well, and I'll be bringing forth some proposals there. My question is, you talked about the ag bill or the ag budget, and there was $4 million increase in spending, but the way I read it and interpret it, there's also $4 million in fee increases to offset that that additional spending. Are all the fee increases monies generated, are they captured in this budget as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, and so that is part of the overall. I think if you go down below in the non-tax revenue line is where you will see the fees are offset and collected at that particular line.
All right. Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Commissioner Franz. I want to put a bill in that has something to do with MMB in Texas so you can come visit us. That'd be a good thing. We'll see who gets promoted next. Okay, a couple things here. First of all, in the budget itself, there's a concentration on transportation, which I think is good. Everybody wants better roads and bridges. But in the proposals, as I've been studying them, you know, with the gas tax increase, the percentage on the wholesale price and so forth, and with the auto licenses, it seems to be extremely regressive. As you go back to the suits indexes last year, and you take a look at those, as you know, cigarette taxes and gas taxes and license fees on cars are extremely regressive. Is there any progressivity in this budget proposal, or are we, because, you know, we hear the story all the time, you know, tax the top 2%, tax the rich. The budget really doesn't do that. Not that that's good tax policy. I think it's poor tax policy anyways. But is there any progressivity in the proposals, or is it extremely regressive as the way I'm reading it?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, I think one of the keys, as you know, as we all know and understand, all sales taxes are regressive in nature, and some more than others, as you rightly point out. But I think the child and dependent care credit is one of those areas that we would propose as being a fairly progressive with an income cap on. It does provide more targeted relief for middle and lower income
folks. I think part of the other issue that in this particular bill and trying to make sure that we provide some tax relief is trying to figure out where is the best place for that. And the governor really believed that the middle class, lower income, through the child care credit was one place where we could help make some difference there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner Franz, just one other issue. I don't know, I had to step out for a second, so I don't know if this was asked or answered. But how do you see, and with the proposals for MNsure, how do you, there's a request for some funds there. What does that take us through? How far does that take us, and how much more, if the enrollment numbers come in a little bit less, would we need to revise that to put more money into MNsure?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Budget Director Kelly to help me on this one.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the increased funding in the governor's budget for DHS and MNsure is to reflect the changing mix between private enrollees and public enrollees. And I believe, I don't know the extent to which those numbers will be up revised with the February forecast.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifiers.
Representative Perkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I've heard the governor talking about an $850 million proposal for additional bonding, apparently this year. Is the debt service for that amount of bonding included in this budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why not?
I'm sorry.
Why hasn't he included that in his budget if he's proposing that amount of bonding?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this goes to some of the other discussions we've had about priorities and difficulties. I mean, the governor would like to see an $850 million bonding bill this year. There is a small amount included in here. I think it's $220 million bonding in this base budget, but he would like to increase that to $850 million. He didn't include it in this budget because he really felt that the other investments were more important and took priority. I think he would like to make that going forward. He's made that quite clear. We're working on preparing that sort of a proposal, but obviously we have to see what happens with the February forecast in terms of whether there's any additional funds, and we also have to we'll take time to work with you all and see if there are other proposals as well. But it's not in there, not because he didn't want it to be there, because it just was too hard to work in with the other priorities.
Representative Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Have you estimated the impact of that amount of bonding on the budget?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, yes, I think it's $56 million additional would be required for this next biennium to fund that level of a bonding bill.
Okay. Seeing no other questions,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have the minutes from January 22nd. Representative Carlson read them and thoroughly understands them. Would you move to approve?
I would like to move the approval of the minutes. Thank you.
Representative Carlson approves the minutes from January 26th. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, with that, I would like... Commissioner, you have a closing statement.
No, not a closing statement, Mr. Chair. Just an advertisement, if you will, for the last page in terms of where you can find access. You have great committee staff here that can get you the documents, but I think for the public who might be watching, there is a great place to go to find these documents online, and it's at the MMB, the mn.gov/MMB website, so that everyone can have access to this information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And members, I would like our next meeting, Thursday, February 5th, immediately following session, room to be announced later, will be 200. Okay, 200. And any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, do you have the agenda then for Thursday's meeting?
The deficiency bill.
The deficiency bill for what areas? All areas? Okay, very good. Thank you.
Any other questions before we adjourn? Seeing none, we are adjourned.